Picture this, right? It is early May 2026. You are in Paris.
Oh, setting the scene right away. I love it.
Yeah, well, you have to visualize it. You step into this private, heavily secured room, and it's operating under the strict Chatham House rule.
Right. And for anyone unfamiliar, that basically means whatever is said in that room, you can share it with the outside world, but you absolutely cannot reveal the identities or affiliations of the speakers.
Exactly. It has to remain completely anonymous.
Yeah.
So the people in this room, they can be brutally honest.
And they were. I mean, we're talking about roughly 100 of the world's absolute top AI researchers, regulators, foundation stewards, founders, all in one place.
And they gathered because, well, the ground beneath the tech world has just violently shifted. So today we are looking at the newly released AI Vision Forum Paris 2026 report.
Yeah, it's a hefty document.
It really is. And the mission of our deep dive today is to basically take you inside that room. We are unpacking this massive silent shift from the old era of, AI as software into what they are now calling the agentic economy.
The agentic economy. It sounds like sci-fi, but it is very real.
Right. This is a world where autonomous systems aren't just like politely answering our questions in a text box anymore.
No, they are spawning their own sub-agents, negotiating with each other, and doing the fundamental building for us.
Totally. We want to give you the shortcut to understanding how to actually survive and thrive in this totally new reality. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Because reading through these source documents, it is absolutely wild to me that even the most elite AI forecasters in the world are now admitting they have to measure their prediction errors, not in years, but in decades.
Yeah, the mood in that room, it was really a stunning realization. Milestones that the consensus said would happen in like 2040 or 2050, they are essentially happening on our laptops right now.
Which is terrifying and amazing.
Exactly. But to ground us, the overarching theme of this entire Paris forum was this concept they called architecting human-AI synergy.
Architecting, that's a very specific word choice.
It is. The key word there is architecting. What they made very clear is that synergy in this new era, it's not some feel-good automatic byproduct of just plugging an AI into your business.
Right, it doesn't just happen by magic.
No, it is a strict contract. It requires engineered trust. You cannot just have blind faith in a black box when these systems are actively making autonomous financial and structural decisions on our behalf.
Yeah, I mean, to even understand where this is going, we first have to look at how the basic machinery of the internet has fundamentally changed almost overnight.
It's a complete paradigm shift.
It really is. For the longest time, the internet ran on what developers call the LAMP stack, like LAMP.
Yes, Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP.
Right. And even if you don't know what those stand for, you know what they did. They were the static building blocks of Web 2.0. You wrote the code, the server stored the data, the website loaded. It was predictable.
Very predictable, very static.
But the Paris report says that is officially dead. We are now living in the era of the CLAW stack, CLAW compute, LLMs, agents, and workflow.
And the CLAW stack is the new bedrock, and it behaves completely differently.
Penso.
Well, it is being driven by what the keynote speaker in Paris called a double exponential rate of change.
Double exponential. That sounds intense.
It is, because on one side you have Moore's Law, right? Pushing raw hardware processing power to new extremes. But that is colliding with an absolute deluge of synthetic data.
Right, data created by AI itself.
Exactly, which is then colliding with AI models that are using that data to compound their own capabilities. It is moving so fast that human intuition literally cannot track the curve anymore.
Yeah, and the keynote actually opened with this incredibly chilling moment. Like, it gave me goosebumps when I read it.
Oh, the chant.
Yes.
Oh.
The speaker had this room of 100 elite tech leaders repeat a chant. They all said, "I will not be eaten by AI."
It's so visceral.
It is visceral. It feels almost primal, And their defense against being eaten by these massive centralized corporate models is this concept of the seven pillars of open.
Right, because they argue that openness can't just be about open source code anymore, where you just publish the text of the software on GitHub or something.
No, it has to be open science, open data, open standards, source, weights, platform, and open hardware. All seven. Or the whole ecosystem centralizes and just falls apart.
But the report is very blunt about a massive capability gap right now.
Yeah, the gap between open and closed.
Exactly. Right now, open weight models are trailing the closed frontier models, ones locked behind massive corporate API paywalls. They're trailing them by about 12 to 18 months.
Which is an eternity in AI time.
Yeah.
And actually, we should probably clarify what we mean by weights here for anyone who isn't like training neural networks on Hurricane.
Fair enough. Think of weights as the learned instincts of the AI. During training, a model processes billions of data points and adjusts millions, sometimes billions, of little internal mathematical dials to recognize patterns.
Right, tuning the dials.
Yeah, those dials are the parameters, and their specific settings are the weights. So releasing an open weight model means giving the public the final tuned version of all those dials.
So you don't have to spend $100 million in electricity to figure out the patterns yourself.
Exactly. It's handing over the finished brain, basically.
But even with those dials handed to you, the hardware gap is staggering.
Yeah.
I mean, the report provided a very specific benchmark that blew my mind.
The M1 Max benchmark?
Yes. They took a task that a closed frontier model executes flawlessly in about 7 minutes, and they gave that exact same task to a similarly sized 30 billion parameter open model.
And they ran it locally, right?
Right, on a 5-year-old M1 Max chip, which, for context, is a very powerful high-end Apple laptop chip from just a few years ago. It's not a potato.
Right, it's a solid machine.
But it took that machine 7 minutes just to load the skill into memory.
It hadn't even started doing the actual work yet. 7 minutes just to wake up and retrieve the instructions.
Which perfectly sets up my major pushback against the tech industry's current obsession with open weights. Like, releasing an open weight model is celebrated like this huge victory for the democratization of AI.
It gets all the headlines.
It does. But looking at this report, that feels like a billionaire giving you the free blueprints to a state-of-the-art skyscraper.
Okay, I like this analogy.
But to actually build the thing, you need a highly specialized proprietary titanium crane that only they own. There's a massive hardware trap documented in this text.
Yeah, there really is. A major lab recently released a frontier openweight model, but it required the absolute newest Blackwell-class chips to actually run efficiently.
And to put that in perspective, Blackwell is the absolute bleeding-edge architecture. Hopper-class silicon was the industry standard just a year prior.
Exactly. So by releasing software tuned specifically for Blackwell, they effectively stranded the world's existing Hopper-class hardware.
It's like releasing a highly anticipated video game that refuses to run on anything but a PlayStation 6 that just came out yesterday. I mean, most of the world's data centers couldn't even run the open model.
What's fascinating here is what that looks like in practice. It is a complete illusion of ownership. The panel in Paris hammered this point home. Releasing open weights without an open compute substrate is a hollow victory.
An open compute substrate. Let's break that down.
The substrate is the invisible translation layer between the code and the silicon. We are talking about the underlying compilers, the kernel languages, the operator libraries that actually tell the microchip exactly how to move the math around.
So the translation layer is the real bottleneck.
Exactly. If those translation layers are closed and proprietary, the silicon vendor controls the whole ecosystem. If open models can only run efficiently on the newest chips controlled by a single massive vendor, then true digital sovereignty is mathematically impossible.
Man, so if the CLOS stack means the AI is doing all the heavy lifting now, like it's navigating the hardware, writing the code, building the workflows, what happens to the humans who used to learn their jobs by doing that exact building?
That's the scariest part of the report for me.
We suddenly have this massive crisis in how humans actually learn. The report bluntly calls it the crisis of the junior. There is a staggering statistic in here. 95% of AI workplace pilots are currently failing.
95%?
Yes. And the forum concluded it is not because the AI isn't smart enough. It is because of bad cognitive design.
Right. They called the specific failure the cognitive black hole.
Cognitive black hole.
Think about how most companies try to deploy AI right now. They plug a custom chatbot into their internal workflow. The AI absorbs all this proprietary data, reads every Slack message, analyzes every past project.
And the model itself gets incredibly capable.
Exactly. But the human collective, the actual employees, they absorb nothing.
I want to break down the mechanism of that because it's fascinating. When an AI solves a complex coding bug for you instantly, your brain never forms the neural pathways that are usually built through frustration, trial, and error.
You're just bypassing the learning process entirely.
Right. You aren't learning the architecture of your company's code base. You're just learning how to ask the chatbot for a Band-Aid. The machine learned the architecture, while the human just became like a prompt typist.
And the people taking the hardest hit from this dynamic are the juniors coming out of school. The report highlights an insane bifurcation in the job market right now.
Yeah, it's brutal.
You have top-tier AI PhD graduates stepping into the market commanding 150,000 euro starting salaries because they understand the deep mathematics.
But the median computer science graduate, the standard developer,
they literally cannot find a programming role at all. The bottom has completely fallen out of the entry-level market because the fundamental role of an engineer has changed overnight.
Because, if you think about it, historically, a junior engineer was essentially an excavator. You gave them a small, safe plot of code, and they dug.
Right, you supervised them.
Yeah, they learned the syntax, they learned the system slowly over time by making small mistakes. But in the agentic economy, a junior has to act as an agent herder or an intelligence orchestrator from day one.
Which is wildly unrealistic. You aren't writing the code from scratch. You are evaluating the code that an autonomous AI agent just wrote.
Which requires an incredibly high level of expertise. To properly evaluate whether an AI just wrote secure, reliable, multi-tenant code that won't crash the server, you need the judgment and context of a senior engineer with 10 years of experience.
But the market is asking 22-year-olds to do it in their first month on the job.
It perfectly mirrors the calculator effect mentioned in the text.
Oh, that's a great historical parallel.
Yeah, like decades ago, market vendors could do incredibly complex mental math instantly because their livelihood depended on it. Then calculators arrived. The tool replaced the skill, and the human ability just atrophied.
Yep, the muscle weakened.
And in the tech industry, we are always taught that friction is the ultimate enemy. We want seamless, one-click, instant solutions. But reading this section on education, I realized something profound. When it comes to human development, friction isn't a bug.
Friction is a feature.
Exactly.
If we look at the cognitive science behind this, what you are describing is productive struggle. Chatbots, by their very nature, are engineered to eradicate friction. You ask a question, you get the final answer.
Boom, done.
But eradicating that friction is actively destroying adolescent development and median student engagement. Learning cannot be a completely frictionless transaction. If you remove the struggle, you remove the learning.
So what did the educators in Paris suggest?
They argued fiercely that we have to build scaffolding into our AI tools.
Okay, but what does AI scaffolding actually look like in practice? Because it can't just be a chatbot that refuses to answer.
No, it's more guided. Instead of the AI just spitting out the finished code block, a scaffolded AI might say, I see you're struggling with this database query. Look at line 42. What do you think happens to the memory load if you change this variable?
Ah, so it acts like a Socratic tutor.
Exactly. We need systems that raise the ceiling of what a student can achieve, rather than just using AI to remove the floor so they never have to try.
Okay, so if the human floor is falling out, and our junior workforce is losing the ability to manually verify the work, and these AI systems are getting so advanced that they are spawning their own sub-agents to complete tasks.
The stakes get very high.
Yeah. How do we actually trust the outputs? Like, if an AI bank agent hires an AI insurance agent, who then hires an AI credit scoring agent, who is accountable when it all goes completely wrong?
This was the core of the afternoon session in Paris. They made a very bold statement regarding the current geopolitical race. They said, sovereign AI without cryptographic verification is just branding.
Oof, just branding.
Right now, you have nations and massive enterprises buying up massive clusters of domestic AI servers and proudly calling it sovereign AI simply because the physical metal sits inside their geographic borders.
But the panel argued that autonomous agents completely break static regulatory frameworks. And they specifically cited the EU AI Act.
Yes.
And let's make sure we clarify the mechanism of the EU AI Act for the listener. And, you know, we aren't taking any political sides on regulation here, left or right. We're just impartially reporting the forum's analysis.
Of course.
The EU AI Act operates fundamentally on a product safety framework. It treats an AI model like a child's toy or like a microwave. You test the product in a lab, you verify it doesn't do anything dangerous, you stamp it as safe, and you release it to the market.
Right. And that framework works fine for static software. But an autonomous agentic system doesn't stay static. It recomposes itself at runtime based on the task.
It morphs.
Exactly. A logistics agent might cross three different international borders mid-task. It might access a weather API in London. a shipping database in Singapore, and a financial ledger in New York.
All in milliseconds.
Yeah. You cannot statically pre-certify something that changes its own behavior and capabilities based on real-time external data. It creates what the researchers call the inspector regress problem.
The inspector regress problem. So if an AI is doing the work at a speed humans can't track, you assign another AI to supervise it.
Right.
But then who supervises the supervisor? You end up with this endless chain of machines, checking machines, with absolutely no human in the loop who actually understands the context of what is happening.
It's a house of cards.
And the report points out that our old open source licenses are completely failing us in this environment.
I sort of think of it this way. Old open source software licenses were like copyright laws for a book.
That's a good way to put it. They told you how you could print, modify, and distribute the text. But when we are dealing with autonomous agents, we don't need a copyright law. We need something closer to a driver's license.
A driver's license is the perfect analogy.
Right. We need a framework that mandates behavioral constraints, that requires audit logs, because the AI is actually driving the system.
And the technical solution proposed in Paris to actually enforce this driver's license concept is something they call the deterministic control plane.
Okay, I have to jump in here because deterministic control plane sounds like heavy military jargon. Are they just talking about putting everything on a blockchain, or is this something else entirely?
It's not just a blockchain, though it does use cryptography. It means capturing tamper-evident contemporaneous evidence at every single system boundary.
At every boundary.
Yes. Imagine an AI agent deciding to transfer funds. At the exact millisecond that agent talks to a subagent or crosses a geographic border, a cryptographic receipt is generated and locked.
And what's on the receipt?
It records exactly what data was requested, what model version was used, and what the exact output was. And why does this matter? Because in an agentic economy, trust can no longer be declared.
You can't just promise it's safe.
Exactly. A company cannot just issue a PR statement saying, "Trust us, our AI is safe." Trust must be cryptographically engineered into the workflow and independently verifiable by a third party. The forum concluded that as the raw cost of computing power continues to drop to near zero, verification, not compute, is going to be the new economic moat for businesses.
Let me push back on that, though. Because that sounds completely counterintuitive to how market economics actually work.
How so?
Well, if an autonomous agent is making a massive trading firm, let's say $10 million a day optimizing derivatives, no executive is going to care about a cryptographic receipt. They care about the profit margin. Why would a company voluntarily slow down their money printing machine to build a bureaucratic verification moat?
Because of the liability cliff.
The liability cliff.
Yes. If that same trading agent hallucinates, spawns a subagent that executes an illegal trade, and the firm cannot cryptographically prove exactly why the machine made that decision, regulators won't just find them. They will shut down the entire automated infrastructure.
Oh, wow. So it's an existential threat.
Absolutely. The moat isn't about slowing down profit. It's about enterprise survival. The company that can provably verify what an AI did and why it did it is the only company that enterprise clients and governments will legally be allowed to hire.
So the receipts are the product.
The receipts are everything.
But engineering this level of cryptographic trust, tracking every boundary, and running these massive fleets of agents, that requires an immense amount of computational fuel.
It's massively resource intensive.
And in this new economy, that fuel is the token.
Hmm.
The fight over who controls the compute tokens is causing an absolute breaking point right now in the open source community.
Compute, expressed as tokens, is now a strategic resource on the exact same level as oil or code. And the panel made a critical distinction that completely shifts how we need to view this. The difference between a free token and an open token.
Because free in tech is never actually free.
Never. The report was brutal about this. Free tokens are just a marketing trap. A massive corporation offers you free compute to run your AI, but the mechanism is designed to ingest your proprietary data and lock your workflow into their closed ecosystem.
Right, you pay with your data. So what's an open token?
Open tokens are completely different. The report says they are governed, transparent, and they account for environmental costs.
Wait, how does a digital token actually track electricity? That sounds impossible.
It comes down to metadata. An open token is a unit of compute that carries a cryptographic wrapper proving its origin. It can verify that the processing power was drawn from, say, a data center utilizing a renewable grid during off-peak hours.
Oh, so it creates a transparent market for computation rather than a hidden subsidy.
Exactly. And we desperately need these open tokens to be distributed as a public good.
Why is it public good?
Because the open source community, the actual humans maintaining the infrastructure of the internet, are currently drowning. The data presented in Paris showed that AI-generated code contributions to open source projects have surged by a staggering 110% in just the last 6 months.
And here's where the narrative really flips. I mean, if AI is supposed to be this magical tool making us infinitely more productive, why are the open source maintainers on the verge of quitting?
Because the community norms haven't adapted to machine-to-machine interactions. Think about the daily reality of a human maintainer right now.
Okay.
They have a flat budget and flat headcount. Suddenly, they are hit with a 110% increase in pull requests, people submitting new code to the project. But this code is written by AI. It looks superficially brilliant, the syntax is perfect, but it might contain subtle, catastrophic security flaws or logical errors deep in the architecture.
And it takes significantly more cognitive load to hunt down a microscopic hallucination in AI-generated code than it does to just write the function yourself.
Exactly. The human maintainers are drowning because the AI is generating work exponentially faster than humans can verify it. It is an unsustainable, asymmetric attack on human attention.
So what's the fix?
The Paris Initiative proposed a radical shift. Compute tokens must be treated as a digital public utility, just like the electric grid or municipal water. There need to be public pools of open tokens made available specifically for students, researchers, and open source maintainers.
So they can fight fire with fire.
Exactly. If maintainers have access to massive pools of free, transparent compute, they can build their own autonomous verification agents to filter out the AI-generated garbage before a human ever has to look at it.
Right.
If we don't treat compute as a public utility to support them, they will burn out, the open source layer will collapse, and we will all be locked into a few corporate ecosystems forever.
So when we zoom out from this secret room in Paris, what is the actual takeaway for us?
Yeah.
I mean, the message is that human AI synergy is a strict, verifiable contract. The openness of the internet has to be fiercely defended at every single layer of that new CLL stack, down to the operator libraries communicating with the microchips.
Every single layer.
And we have to accept that friction is essential for human learning. We cannot automate away our own cognitive development. And if you are in business, verification is your new economic moat.
Well said.
So for you, the listener, whether you are prepping for a board meeting tomorrow or you are just insanely curious about where the world is heading, your future role is shifting. You are no longer just a creator of syntax or a manual digger of code. You are becoming an intelligence orchestrator.
It is a massive paradigm shift in what constitutes human value in a digital economy.
Yeah, your ultimate value in the marketplace will lie in your ability to precisely specify complex goals, design the scaffolding for your team, and cryptographically verify the outputs of the agents doing the work.
Right. The premium is no longer on generation. The premium is on critical evaluation and systemic trust.
And as we leave you today, I want you to think back to those autonomous agents we talked about, the ones recomposing themselves and crossing international borders at millisecond speed.
It's a wild thought.
Let me leave you with this final, lingering question to mull over. If an AI agent autonomously spawns a sub-agent to optimize a task for your company, and that entirely unsupervised sub-agent invents a highly profitable piece of code.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process, it accidentally breaks a regional data privacy law to get the training data. Who legally owns the patent for that invention?
It's a legal nightmare.
And more importantly, who holds the liability for the crime? Are we actually prepared for a world where code itself might need to be put in a digital jail?
It's a reality we're going to have to architect incredibly quickly.
Next time you're using an AI, just remember, you are the orchestrator now.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the AI Vision Forum Paris 2026 report. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and we will catch you on the next one.